what we'd like to do is then retrace your activities from the time you left Peña Mundi. If you could describe what your duties were at Peña Mundi very briefly, and then why you left Peña Mundi and what you were doing in Berlin, and what sort of contact and who you dealt with, and any stories or recollections that you have of the last day. I turn off.
Stationed in Ilfeld. In Ilfeld. And was working with Mr. Northrop together. He belonged to Degenkolb.
Oh, I see. When did Degenkolb come to the When did Degenkolb come? I think he came only in 44. So that must have been in 44. And did you ever meet with Degenkolb?
No.
Did you ever see Savatsky?
I have only seen him, because our people, Stegmeier, Oberstleutnant Stegmeier, he was over there in Mittelwerk too, Fleischer, and all these people, Rudolf, was also in Mittelwerk, and I, Norport was in charge to get all the parts together, and they got the deliveries and didn't know what to do with them, they didn't know where they belonged to, they got a bunch of pipelines, and didn't know where to place them, and I was there to help them, and tell them this pipe goes there and that goes there, and this piece of equipment belongs to guidance and control.
And then you would go back to Peña Mundi, or?
No, I didn't go.
Then you went directly to Berlin.
Yeah, I was taken to Berlin.
And you had several people working with you in Berlin. This was a liaison job in Berlin.
These were three people I had.
Could you tell us a little bit about your work there and how you performed the liaison with the Peña Mundi group?
We had only to do with the relocation of fabrication, of manufacturing. Every night there was tech bombs were dropped, and the place, the working place, was destroyed, and we had to look for another one. Get the machines, if they were still working or intact, we could take the machines out and the material out and get the people to the new working place. You know, we had to sometimes to make a new foundation, put some holes in the ground and put some bolts in and fasten the machines.
Where did you get this equipment? If there's equipment, where did you get it? Did you get it from other areas, the equipment, if you had a higher priority than?
Private.
From private industry?
From private industry, which were working for us. But their place was suddenly destroyed.
So, but where did you get the replacement equipment? I mean, wasn't there a tremendous amount of production in many areas going on at the time? If you lost one of your plants, they tied in with a rocket propulsion.
These are only small plants.
Well, these are just small plants.
Which had only, let's say, working people, 35, 40, 50 people at the most.
I see.
Well, the smaller part, manufacturer. And we had to look for a new place then. And start them working again.
So where did you get, if the plant was destroyed and their equipment was destroyed, where did you get the new equipment at this time? Was this very difficult to...
You had to steal it from somebody else.
You had a higher priority then than most people.
We had a piece of paper that was signed mostly by Degenkolb. And we went with this one and we got it.
I see. So some plant that was making the product for some other element.
In Norfolk, place, the same thing. It's a company, or one company had difficulty with shipment. One of ours was sent there. And we picked up the equipment, and we even could stop fast-going trains, which never stopped on this railroad station. We could, the officer or the man in charge, make him stop that train, and load that equipment and bring it to Nordhausen.
That's the power that you have. Do you have some specific examples of this, or any that you can remember, stories that are particularly interesting to you?
Yeah, I got from Hannover, Messsonden in know, to measure the level of the fuel in the tank. They were fabricated in university in Hanover. And I got them there. I stopped the trains there and loaded them. You know, these big fast-going trains, they were not supposed to take any freight. They took only baggage from the passengers, but not these long Messrunden. I don't know how you call it, measuring.
That's all right, we'll pick it up and we'll... No, let's, don't worry about it. Any German words you want to introduce me to, go ahead.
Yeah, you had mostly trouble to get the people loaded with equipment.
Mm-hmm. How did you get the people? Where did you find the people?
No, these were employees from the railroad.
Regular railroad employees,
Yeah. No, army trucks picked up. You could go to the next garrison and present your piece of paper and said, I need a truck and some soldiers to load that equipment.
No. That piece of paper had a lot of power at that time.
A lot of power.
So you would do these, you would leave Berlin and handle all of these problems, and you return to Berlin and prepare for the next problem. Now, could you tell us a little bit about after Berlin? What was it like in Berlin? Were you at work? Were you, did you have...
That's what I told you in...
I mean, it's part of it, the physical part of it. Did you have bombardment troubles, and did you have to move around from area to area? Or were
I was lucky. I lived... my brother was a soldier, too. And my sister lived in Berlin. She was working for the post office. And I could stay with her. And that was a little bit outside from the middle of the city.
That's right.
One of the suburbs.
Suburban. Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have any trouble there.
How about your offices, though? Were they bombed?
That was... my office was not in the Department of Ammunition, but across the street in the Hochschule für Musik. Academy for Music. And this was partly bombed out. We even had no heating system in there. We had only little stoves.
Was that Academy of Music in now East Berlin?
No.
In West Berlin. Berlin. Academy of Music. Is it still there?
Close to the Bahnhof Zoo.
Oh, yeah.
Railroad station Zoo.
Uh-huh, good.
There was a Department of Ammunition.
Rodenstrasse. Have you been back there?
Huh?
Did you go back to Berlin after the war?
Yeah.
Is it, what's there now?
Yeah. No, that is mostly industry.
Oh, the industry now. Yeah. I see.
And this music, Academy of Music is rebuilt.
Mm-hmm.
Quite modern.
I see. You don't have any pictures of your old offices?
No.
That would be interesting to find. Let's track those down somehow.
You didn't have any pictures there. No. We even used seats from the auditorium. It was destroyed. There wasn't a roof anymore on me, and everything was down. We used that wood to heat our own little room.
That's interesting. Those are the kind of things that are very interesting, right? And when, what led you to leave Berlin finally? How, what sort of orders did you get?
One day we were told the war is over. The Russians were already close to the town. The eastern part of Berlin was already occupied. And we were told the war is to end. And we got a certain amount of money to pay the people a little bit. No, we got only a monthly payment in Germany. And 3 months in advance, that money. It wasn't worth anyhow.
This is just before the Russians came there.
Just before the Russians.
And what did you do?
They told us, destroy everything you have, that it doesn't fall into the hands of the enemy, and go home.
And where was your home?
Yeah, my sister.
Well, you wouldn't go there, would you? I mean, that's right in Berlin.
No, but I have to mention, I was still sleeping during night in her apartment, but she went, their point of duty was in the eastern part of Germany, and she got caught there, because the Russians were overrunning this, and she was in duty hours, she couldn't leave.
She couldn't leave.
Yeah. Otherwise, she had to go to the fighting line.
Fighting line.
And did you want to join up with the group in Bavaria?
No.
You never had any.
I took only my belongings, what I had with me, and went back to my parents. There was my wife and my daughter.
And where was it?
That is in Trebin. The south, nearly say south from Berlin, about how many miles are this? 30 kilometers.
That's good enough, though.
30 kilometers south of Berlin. My parents had an orchard, and my wife and my daughter were with them, because we got out in Finland, bombed out in Finland, and I could only use a train. I would say half the way, and from there I had to walk.
But you finally reached it.
I finally reached it because all the railroad tracks were destroyed already. The stops.
And Trebin was in the eastern part.
Later on, it was eastern part.
And have the Russians moved into the area?
The Russians?
Yes.
They moved in our part, and I was living for 8 years in the eastern part of Germany.
Under the Russians?
Under the Russians. We even
Well, go ahead. What did you do during those 8 years?
I took care of the orchard. Daddy was at that time already 86 years old. My mother had in 1945 in December an accident, stumbled down the stairs and he broke the neck.
No, but then after those 8 years, then you came over to this.
I was during the first time. I was only in a neighborhood, in a what was a nursery, and then I stopped this. You know, you had to cover up because the Russians were always looking for people.
So you didn't want them to know your technical background?
No.
I see. So you?
I was fortunately that not too many people knew about where I had been working. That I was in Peenemünde. And I was in Peenemünde since 1937. I was one of the first ones from the technical design.
Could you tell us then? Let's finish the 8 years. And after that, how did you come to America? I'd like to just mention that. All that to
I
lived
there,
story.
And I had to fill several questionnaires because the Russian always wanted to know what the people were doing in earlier time. And you know, I mostly told lies, that I was an electromechanical worker, and was hoping that they didn't know what it was.
That was one of the cover names.
Cover name, yeah. Now, that was an earlier time already used,
Electromechanische
Werke, Karl Sagen.
And you don't think the Russians, they didn't know what it was?
At that time, they didn't know.
Probably the local troops or whatever.
Yeah.
They didn't know. And I lived there for 8 years. And one day, a police showed up at my house. And asked me I should come to the courthouse. There is one Russian commissioner, and he wants to talk to me. And I knew exactly what it was, that they could have found out that I wasn't in there. And they took me, these two policemen took me to the courthouse, and these there was a Russian officer and one lady, a German lady, and he pretended not to speak any, to understand any German. I had to face the lady, and he was sitting on the other side, watching me. And he asked a question in Russian, her, and she asked me in German. And they wanted to know where I had worked, and at that time I found out they knew exactly that I was in Peenemünde, that I had worked in Peenemünde. My only concern was that during that time they were questioning me, that they didn't ask my wife and my daughter and my daddy. Mm. But they didn't do
that. They didn't do that. Huh?
They didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we were talking about for 2 hours. Right? We were talking. Right?
What did you tell them?
I told them only that I agreed I was in Peenemünde, working in Peenemünde, but I had never anything to do with the missile. Right? Mm. We had some manufacturing places where we did, how do you call it, Einrichtungen and Zubehör. No, no, not furnishing. No. We had shops where, for instance, only some supports were made for the test stands.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Installation for a test stand.
Yeah.
Equipment
used to make the
used
make the
test stand. And these people were not, I will say, working with confidential things, or even secret things.
Yeah.
And I told them I was working there.
These are support workers, support activities.
Work.
Yeah.
And I knew all the people there, and they knew the people too. They asked me at that time even if I could name people which were living in the eastern part of Germany which would be interested to take a job with the Russians. They even mentioned at that time Gretlov. They asked me if I know him.
Yeah.
I had worked with him together and so on. I told them, well, I know him by name, but we had no technical connection with each other. And I was fortunate, we had I don't know if you know that, Russian prisoners of war, working in Peenemünde.
In Peenemünde, yes, I've heard about that, and Polish also.
And they were working for the technical design team. They were connected in one group in Wolgast, close to Wolgast, and we supplied them with work. And I told this guy that we had Russian soldiers working, mostly the officers, working there. And if tests were going on, firing, these officers and all the people which were not supposed to work with secret and confidential things, we were put together in one room which had no window. You could hear something, but you didn't know what it was.
Didn't know what it was.
And he knew that also. And I told him, I was always between these guys. I don't know what they built there. We heard always big noises, but...
So you played a good role.
And he believed that.
So
and after 2 hours, he finally said, came out with his card and told me he would offer me a job. He asked me what I was working on, and I told him that I was working for my daddy, Orchard, and he said, you are an engineer, it doesn't work for you. And I told him, we have no industry here. And then he offered me a job and told me he could manage that. There was in Wildau, Königs Wusterhausen, Wildau, there was a locomotive manufacturer in earlier time. Maffei Schwarzkopf in earlier time. And he told me he could manage that, I could get a job there. And I made, and told him, but it's not so easy, see. We have here that orchard, and my daddy is already fairly old, 86 years old, and he cannot work so much, and we have a soil, what is that name? We are obligated to deliver some food for the population. And so who is doing that. And then he told me, that can be taken care of. And at that time, he knew exactly already that my daddy had was in the process to transfer the property to my name.
Mm-hmm. Very investigative.
He knew that already. Mm-hmm. Right? And that was done because I had a brother and sister in Western Berlin. Right? And if my daddy would pass away, we three children would
inherit.
Mm-hmm. But in this case, I would get only one third, but the other two thirds, my brother and sister, are Western. Mm-hmm.
They would not understand.
Mm? And I couldn't give them the money, I had to pay even taxes. Vermögensteuer, Erbschaftssteuer, Heritage Tax, which is the same. And I had to pay the tax for my brother and sister, for their part. But in Western Mark, not in Eastern Mark. And at that time it was 1-4.
Oh boy.
That would mean my whole heritage would be gone. I could only work on that place. And that was all. And to avoid this, my daddy had transferred all the property to my name. It would mean that my brother and sister wouldn't get anything. And we had in mind that this was not completely through. But this guy, this commissioner, he knew about
it. He knew all about all this, huh?
That we were in process to doing that, and doing this. And we had, on the other hand, the intention, at that time we still could go over to the
Western Zone.
My brother and sister couldn't come over. But we could go over to the Western part. We had in mind, as soon as this was done, I was the owner of that property, I would go to the Western part with my brother and sister and go to a public notary and make there another statement that everybody of us gets his part as soon as the Eastern Zone is again together with the Western part.
Western Zone, so you had made all these arrangements.
We were not quite through because the Eastern part was not finished. We had to do that later on.
Well, after all of this, how did you make a decision to leave?
After this discussion with the Russian officer, I have I have to go back a little bit. In 1948, I got a postcard from a former man from Peenemünde. We were working together. He was in France at that time.
Who was he?
Kreyer Junior.
He worked for Pilz, Pilz, I think.
He was working with Pilz in Sanger's outfit. At that time he was in France. Later on he came to Sanger.
I see.
He wrote me a postcard only, and there was only a short sentence on Werner would like to see you. Werner von Braun. Am I supposed to give him your address? He knew my address in the eastern part of Germany. That was the only one.
So what did you do after seeing
and that? And I told them, I went over to Western Berlin to my mother-in-law, her mother, and got from there. Right? Heavens no, don't tell him my address. Right? But you can give him the address of my mother-in-law and my brother and sister. Right? And if they want to contact them, right, we will find some means that I get informed. Mm-hmm. It was in 1948. Mm-hmm. And there are some people here from White Sands already. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Old Mr. Tessman for him. Mm-hmm. He wrote to my mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. And my mother-in-law, we had made an agreement with her. If there is something for us, mail coming in, send us a postcard and only place the stamp a little bit out of the way.
This is great.
A little bit out of the way. And then only greetings.
Right, so that would be the signal for you.
And that's for me, it's a signal that something has to be done. I have to come over and look what it is. Mm-hmm. And that was it went back and forth. Uh-huh. And this guy from France, Kreer.
How do you spell his name, please? Kreer.
Could I spell it in German?
Yeah, German. I want to make sure we get it.
K-R-E-H-A. Otto.
Is he still living in Paris?
Otto.
He still lives in Paris or in Vernon? Is he in Vernon now?
In Vernon.
Still in Vernon. Okay. I know Vernon. I've been out there. So.
This junior, we have another Kreer, his daddy, he was also in Peenemünde.
No.
But he's already deceased.
Okay.
Otto Kreer one day recommended that I should contact headquarters in Berlin. Theodorf Klerle. Right? And I went there and I managed to come through the guard. You know, I couldn't speak any English at that time. I had, by then, 40 years ago, 1 year English in school, but that was all. And I managed to come through and finally find a gentleman who was willing to listen to me. Right? And which could understand German, a little bit French. He also spoke a little bit French, and French was a little bit better with me because I had 6 years in school. I could still speak a little bit French in school, and also had some experience French speaking when I was a soldier in World War One. They used me as an interpreter at that time, partly. So. I told him everything, and he had also the addresses from my mother-in-law, my brother and sister. And one day we got the news that Mr. Rees, Dr. Rees, is coming over, but this was in 1950 already.
That's too long.
A long time. And I met him, and we were talking in the presence of this gentleman, the other one, which I had contacted first, and at that time they promised me, you are a little bit old already. I was at that time 53 years old. And I think Mr. Dr. Rees had only the permission to hire people till 50. But they told me, you look much, much younger. And they hope that they can make it. Get me through.
Yeah.
But it took them 3 years.
3 years to do it?
3 years,
So
because, there's no way to get any reference. About you. If you are living in the eastern part of Germany, you could be a convict.
The references from his Russian
Wouldn't tell anything about me. Because I didn't tell them the truth either.
Yeah. So you get bad references to the Russians. That would help.
Yeah. So, and that was before that discussion with the Russian commissioner. When I had that discussion with the Russian officer, we decided that it's time now to leave the eastern part of Germany.
Yeah. 2 days before you got paper from the American consulate.
Yeah.
And we were afraid the Russian know about this, that we had the paper here from America.
This discussion with the Russian officer, the poor oder die Nachricht vom
in Amerika hat meine Hand the trouble.
I had the agreement with that gentleman in headquarters, that I would take the job over here and would go over, but that was in June, and I agreed to be ready by October to leave over here. And I came back with that information to my wife, my family, and 2 or 3 days later, that Russian officer got me to the courthouse and was discussing with me a job in the Russian part, what I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. And I was afraid that they had learned that the Americans were already in contact with me. Therefore we said, now is the time that we have to go out of the eastern part of Germany and go over to the western part.
So you could still move with relative ease in those times. You could still move.
Yeah, we could move, but this one had already difficulties. You know, you had, if you wanted to go over to the east, to the western part of Germany, you had to buy a ticket, a railroad ticket, and there they put your passport number on the back, and they asked if you when you will come back, and so on. You were always under control, but this is with all the people. Which were using the trains. There were not too much trains going.
Mostly you could take anything along.
Three in each direction during the day. In the morning, around noon, and in the evening.
So when you left, you didn't carry things much with you then when you finally left?
I first went over alone and took some valuable things with me.
What sort of things?
A leather coat and my photo. Cameras. First to find out where they're watching me. And the next day my wife did it. The same. I came back in the evening. Next day my wife did it. And she took some silver.
And got left in Berlin.
And left them in and two holes over each other because we didn't know what we would find here. And the third day, that was on a Sunday. Sunday. My wife, my daughter, and my daddy.
The dog. The
dog. Oh, the dog
too?
Yeah, a little dog. A Pomeranian we have. They were leaving for good. And we had spread only the rumor around that my daddy, he used to go over during winter time anyhow, because we were short on coal and wood. We couldn't heat the room. And my brother and sister, they were living in the western part of Berlin. They had heating and everything. And therefore my daddy went over for several weeks and stayed over there. And the people in our neighborhood were used to that. That the old gentleman
went sometimes over to Berlin and had a good time over there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we took care of the plantation. Mm-hmm. And there we spread the rumor, they are going over because my daughter was
confirmation.
I don't know what you, you have confirmation here too.
Yeah.
That was in May, confirmation of my daughter. Mm-hmm. And our people from the western part couldn't come over. And we spread the rumor, we go over now and want to celebrate a little bit about that confirmation with the family members. Her family, my family, what was still left. So they left for good. And I had the intention to follow the next morning because I had to destroy several things. I still had some confidential things from pain and illness.
You destroyed those, you didn't keep any?
I was destroying them, burning them.
Where did you keep them?
Huh?
Where did you, have you kept these things?
No, not in the basement, in the roof. You know, we have other houses in Germany with big roofs. And we even have to dry the wash on top. Under the roof.
And you put them
up?
Attic. In the attic we could dry the brush. And therefore there was a floor, a wooden floor. And we had beams, wooden beams, going across. And this roof was sloped. But the room itself was rectangular. And this space, you could reach it on some places and hide something between the ceiling from the lower room and the floor of the upper room. There was always a room like this and the beams like this. You could hide things there.
So that's where you hid the documents and you destroyed those.
There I was hiding the documents and even we were hiding our valuables there. Because the Russian soldiers, they were always going around and robbing. And we had a hard time, they were stealing our foods. We had, as I told you, an orchard, apple, cherries, plums, everything. And they were stealing. Night, every night. Therefore we had their dogs. So, I destroyed these things. And even I had a shooting, a pistol from World War I and one from my brother was still there with ammunition. He had to destroy them.
Destroy all of that.
I dig a big hole in the yard and buried them.
So after all of that then you left.
And now there was, when they came to Berlin, my brother, he was very anxious that why is my brother not coming with you? And he sent my daughter back to me on Sunday. She came back in the afternoon and told me I should come right away. And I told her, no, I don't come. We go together next morning. Because I had too much to destroy, to bury. And I could do that only, mostly only during night time, because we had, what is that now? Yeah, we had a lady living in the second floor. She was a party member, but in the eastern part. And she even was in charge there. She had a little bit higher position, and that was dangerous.
So you had to get her to sleep first.
I had to watch her. So
should have buried her
next
too.
Morning, on Monday morning, we prepared to go. I had only accordion, and even in that accordion, I had taken that thing apart, and were hiding in there. All the paper which belonged to the house,
Oh, yeah.
The deed,
right,
and
right.
Birth certificates and marriage license and all these things. Mm. All the papers, the personal papers. Mm. I couldn't leave them. Mm-hmm. I had to take them with me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I opened the accordion and put all these things in there. Mm-hmm. And closed it.
But you didn't play that accordion on the train.
No, you couldn't. And there was no opportunity to play it on the train.
You can make a nice scene, though. You can see a Russian accordion.
Yeah. And we were... I wanted to catch a train a certain time. I think it was around 9 o'clock in the morning. We wanted to catch a train, but